Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It is Monday, so this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column sometime in the last 10 years. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy this show. This story was first published on April 10th of 2016, under the headline, Great Women of Oregon History, Part 2, The Firsts. Here we go. In last week's column, we launched into an overview of great women from Oregon history whose names ought to be mentioned next time the chance comes up to name a bridge or a mountain after an important and overlooked historical figure. Today we'll continue that list with several more path-breaking, relatively unknown women from Oregon history, starting with Governor Carolyn B. Shelton, the first female governor in U.S. history, also the first former governor to marry another former governor. That would be a tie with George Chamberlain. Carolyn B. Shelton was essentially a paralegal before there were paralegals, working for a progressive young attorney named George Chamberlain. She started out working for him as a stenographer, but he quickly recognized her aptitude for the law, and soon she was drafting legal documents and doing research for him. She soon became his most trusted assistant, and when her boss was elected governor of Oregon, she went with him to the Capitol as his private secretary. Now, to the modern ear, this sounds like a very commonplace thing, because to modern people, secretaries are stereotypically women. But this was not the case with private secretaries to government officials in the 1910s. It was unusual for Chamberlain to have a private secretary who was a woman, as it would be today to have a female secretary of defense, which is to say not unusual enough to elicit shocked comment, but not common either, and with very little, if any, historical precedent. Then Chamberlain was elected to the U.S. Senate and had to travel to Washington, D.C. to be sworn in. His successor, Franklin Benson, was sick in bed. Now, in a situation like this, the standard procedure for the state of Oregon was for the governor's private secretary to step in as acting governor during his absence. But never before had a governor's private secretary been a woman. Nonetheless, Chamberlain handed over the keys to the office to his trusty private secretary and hopped on an eastbound train. And so, for the first time in U.S. history, for one weekend in early 1909, a U.S. state was governed by a woman. Come Monday, Benson was feeling better, and after he was sworn in, Shelton traveled east to join her boss. By the way, while we're on the subject of firsts, 17 years after this incident, Shelton and Chamberlain married each other. It rather goes without saying that this was the first time that had ever happened, two former governors marrying one another. Next, let's talk about Charlotte One-Eyed Charlie Parkhurst, likely the first woman to vote for a U.S. president after 1807, and the first and probably only female stagecoach driver. Back in the 1860s, before railroad lines were punched through the Siskiyou Mountains to connect Oregon with California, the stagecoach lines were the most important thing going. And the men who drove those 4- and 6-horse rigs were among the most admired tough guys of the frontier. A stagecoach driver faced all sorts of hazards in his daily work, from runaway horse teams to nests of rattlesnakes, but the biggest risk a stage driver ran by far was robbers. Until the railroad came through, most of the gold and valuables sent from town to town, lumber camp payrolls, the produce from gold mines, stacks of cash to be used for political bribes, all came and went in express boxes on a stagecoach. Robbers very seldom, if ever, set out to murder a stage driver. But when a stagecoach driver heard the words, stick 'em up, he never knew if the robber was going to be one of those smooth, gentlemanly types like Black Bart Bolton or a twitchy, jittery drunkard clutching a cocked Winchester. Sometimes gunfights did break out, and most often the stage drivers lost these gunfights. They made fine targets high up on their seats. One-Eyed Charlie Parkhurst was a stagecoach driver and one of the very best. Charlie was better with the horses than anyone else. He had less trouble with robbers than most other drivers, too. He had a reputation as a hard driver to get the drop on. In at least one robbery attempt, he, quote, turned his wild Mustangs and his wicked revolver loose, according to an 1880 article in the New York Times, and, leaving at least one would-be robber behind dead, brought the box through safely. After that, most robbers just avoided crossing paths with him. He mostly worked the California runs, but his job also regularly brought him over the Siskiyous into southern Oregon as well. Charlie did not die on the job. Stricken with tongue cancer, probably from chewing tobacco, he gave up the ghost in 1879 and was laid out to be prepared for burial. It was only then that the frontier doctors and coroners discovered the truth. Charlie was short for Charlotte, not Charles. The truth slowly emerged. Orphaned as a little girl, Charlotte had run away from the orphanage and dressed as a boy to disguise herself. The disguise had opened so many doors for her that she'd never switched back. In 1868, Charlie was registered to vote in the presidential election that elected Ulysses S. Grant. If she cast that vote, as she most likely did, she was probably the first woman to vote for president since 1807, when the franchise was still tied to land ownership in a few eastern states. Finally, we have Lola Baldwin, the first sworn policewoman in U.S. history. There is some dispute as to whether Lola Baldwin was really the first policewoman. It comes down to one's definition of police officer. She didn't wear a uniform or walk a beat, but in 1908, when Baldwin was officially hired by the Portland Police Department, it was the first time a city PD had sworn a woman in and given her a police power, badge, and salary. Baldwin was a teacher and social hygiene activist from back east who moved to Portland with her husband, a dry goods merchant, in the late 1890s. As a volunteer with the Travelers Aid Society, she soon developed a sterling local reputation as a strong, effective, compassionate advocate for young women. Meanwhile, the Lewis and Clark Centennial Exposition was coming to Portland, and Mayor Harry Lane was worried about out-of-town swindlers and human trafficking operators. They called them white slavers back then, by the way, and getting, quote, fallen women and, quote, unwed mothers the help that they needed. She also earned a reputation for fair dealing among saloon and brothel proprietors, with whom she often worked to keep underage girls away from their businesses. In 1908, having worked for 3 years as a volunteer supported by local charities, Baldwin put the touch on the Portland City Council to create the Women's Auxiliary to the Police Department for the Protection of Girls, and to hire her to run it. She laid out her case in very rational, logical terms and then, in mild tones, closed the deal with mic-dropping finality. Quote, "We noticed that there was $5,030 this year used for the dog pound, and an additional $1,000 is asked for 1908," she remarked. "Wouldn't the city consider allocating just half that amount?" she added. Quote, "For practical, positive protection for the growing girlhood of the city of Portland?" It certainly could. In fact, what choice did it have? Key sources in this article have included works by Gloria Myers, Kimberly Jensen, and the archives of the New York Times. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 550 stories originally created and published as newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com. Other Offbeat Oregon goodies include an active Facebook page, a Twitter feed, a ton of historic photos, and a bunch more stuff, including visuals for today's show and full citations to sources, all accessible via our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. It's called The Old Man's Waltz. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode, email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.